Photographs of Iraqi prisoners suffering abuse at the hands of American soldiers spread across television screens, newspapers, and websites around the world this past week. In the United States, some local papers carried pictures of hooded Iraqis beside familiar faces of soldiers, soldiers who had recently been students at the local high school or who worked in nearby shops and factories. They and their friends, family members, and their neighbors now have so many questions. How could this happen? Robert J. Lifton is a visiting professor of psychiatry at Harvard Medical School. He studied the behavior of individuals under stress and group dynamics, and he's on the phone from his home in Cambridge. Thanks for your time, Dr. Lifton.
Glad to be here.
You know, so often when we're shocked and we hear from the friends and the neighbors of the people who are accused of doing such shocking things, you hear phrases like, it doesn't seem possible. I couldn't imagine this person was capable of doing these things. What is it that causes people to do the kinds of things that we have seen in these photographs?
Well, I think there are several things to say. One is the creation of a group process that goes really beyond individual psychology, and one can call that group process an atrocity-producing situation. And I came upon that term in working with Vietnam veterans, but what it really means is a situation into which ordinary people may come, people who are no better or worse than you or me, and commit atrocities. And that has to do with the structure of that situation psychologically and militarily in terms of what it demands of people or encourages of people, and thereby creating atrocities.
About the military structure, is there a process for perhaps preparing soldiers for a structure, in this case war, that calls for dehumanizing the enemy that can contribute then to the kind of atrocity or abuse that we saw at Abu Ghraib?
Well, of course, all armies carry out some form of basic training, which is really a way of transforming a civilian self into a military self, a civilian self which is relatively nonviolent into a military self in which the job to do is killing. There is that, along with obedience to authority. All that becomes very important in the military. But to really carry through atrocities of this kind, you need something more. You need a situation that has some sanction, some approval from above, and which draws in people from below who have psychological struggles of their own. And this is most likely to happen, it happens in all wars, but it's most likely to happen in counterinsurgency wars, as in the case of Vietnam and now Iraq, in which you feel under duress and threatened, and there's considerable hostility from the environment, and it's very hard to locate and pin down your enemy.
What happens then to the individual when he or she leaves this culture, this group dynamic, this group process that has resulted in abusive behavior, and they return to their normal environment?
Well, it's a real struggle, and it's full of conflict, because to carry through the work of that violent environment or the so-called atrocity-producing situation, one had to form a special new self. Of course, it's the same person, but one forms a second self in what I call doubling. One becomes a different person in that environment, and that's why old friends hardly recognize that person. And when one returns to an ordinary environment and is no longer in a situation of atrocity, one seeks to return to that earlier, more humane self, or with some kind of new self that absorbs both what one has been through and returns to some of the more humane characteristics one has known in the past. And it's a constant struggle over time, along with experience of trauma and some self-condemnation or guilt.
This group process, there are photographs, there are stories of inhumanity every day. This may seem naive, maybe I'm even being a Pollyanna here, but is this inevitable?
To some extent, it's inevitable. You can find this kind of atrocity-producing situation in ordinary civilian prisons, and it's been described there quite frequently. You find some such atrocities in all wars, even in World War II, which is often called our last good war, in the sense of feeling very justified and necessary in fighting it. But where you have added situations of a counterinsurgency war like this one, and a war in which there's confusion about the mission and hostility from the population, and also a certain ideological pressure to justify the war, which I think contributed to the enormous stress on interrogation and therefore the function of the group in this prison of softening up detainees for interrogation. All those factors contribute to much more likelihood of an atrocity-producing situation being sustained or repeated in such a war.
Robert J. Lifton is visiting professor of psychiatry at Harvard Medical School. He's also the author of Superpower Syndrome. He spoke with us from his home in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Thank you, Dr. Lifton.
Thank you very much.